Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
So welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. Once again, my name is Simon Dell. I'm your host for today. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we get started. If you want to find out anything else about CMO, CEMOH.com, we're Australia's only marketing staff on-demand business. If you're interested in any audio work, go and talk to thepodcastboss.com. He does all of our editing and everything. And finally, rate and review us. If you enjoy today, rate and review us on iTunes. We would very much appreciate that. But with all of that out of the way, let's talk to our guest today. I've known this gentleman for a long, long time. We've kind of crossed paths dozens of times in the past 15 years, 10, 15 years, something like that. I've seen him go from a little business in a shed to a giant, massive e-commerce business across Australasia. So the Australasian director of Love Honey, welcome to the show, Rob Godwin. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me on today.
Now, before we go anywhere, let's talk about the shed in West End, because it was a bit of a shed, wasn't it? It's like one of those up and down offices. It was the office up downstairs and storage down the bottom. Was that the first shed?
With Love Honey's incarnation, we had a spare bedroom in Indooroopilly. So it was just me and one other person who flew out from England. And following that, no one would give us a lease because they would Google me and find that I sell adult films and inverted commas a pornographer. And so no one literally, even though we were running a £30 million business at the time, no one will give Love Honey a lease. So it was only through a friend of a friend who owned a restaurant that knew someone that said, give him a break. And we got this shed, as you described it, which was 70 square meters, and grew out of that within, 8 months.
So that's 70 square meters back in what, 2000 and what was that roughly?
13.
2013. How many square meters is the warehouse in Brisbane today?
5,000 square meters.
Okay.
Yeah. So that itself
really for me sums up what you've done in 9 years. It's pretty spectacular, isn't it?
It's gone from literally myself, one person with a landline, with a hard line connection, ADSL, to now 67 staff working 7 days a week and some departments working 24/7. So we've got now six departments. So we leapfrogged from one little shed to a slightly bigger shed to then one warehouse in Eagle Farm to now we've taken over half of Nextdoor's warehouse and intentions to take another 2,000 square meters in 2023.
For those that obviously haven't guessed and didn't do their research before they started listening to this show, Love Honey does pretty much everything and anything in the adult industry, sex toys. Give us a kind of a rough overview of the product lines, because there's a lot of them.
So lovehoney.com.au, which is part of the Love Honey group globally. We have 5,000 products. We distribute. We're Australia Post's largest customer now in Northern Brisbane.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
That's good.
I have the honour of sitting on their consumer advisory board, the 2020 Aurea Award for Best Online Retailer. Within our range, 70% of what we do is own brand. So whether that's licensed or own manufacturing. So we own big brands like 50 Shades of Grey. We have just recently merged with a company called Wowtech, which is the leading technology company in the world that makes pulsating air technology products under the brand of WeVibe and Womanizer and others like ArcWave. And we merged with them in mid-August 2021. And now we have 830 staff in 9 offices around the world with our 2 key head offices in Berlin and Bath. So it's kind of come a long way from where we started in 2013 with about, I'd say about 2,000 products, and we only operated Monday to Friday, and we had a couple of staff and customer service, one finance person, one, not even had a marketing person then. We had a mass amount of spare space, and the owners came out to help us set up the warehouse and were like, what have you done? like two-thirds of the warehouse wasn't used. And you fast forward 18 months from then, the whole warehouse was full. You fast forward to the cusp of COVID, and we had three other warehouses just to cope with our volume until we captured more space and put in some more infrastructure. So it's been a great and very lucky and hardworking success story for Love Planner.
A couple of questions out of that. COVID was obviously good to you, you know. Tell us how that kind of changed the business. Obviously, lots of people stuck at home wanting to find ways of entertaining themselves, I guess.
Yep. it was at first, as most businesses looked, it was like, oh my God, what do we do? This is diabolical. This is, the world's going to implode, etc. We very quickly realized this is actually a huge opportunity. Whilst COVID has been, we would never want it, and you'd never want to see people go through the pain of COVID, it was an absolutely huge opportunity to take market share, to accelerate the online adoption. Some have read many commentary that the online market has been accelerated by about 5 to 7 years. And I would actually agree with that. With our growth rate over that period, we went from 28 staff before COVID to, we touched on just around 60 staff during the tail end of 2020. And that kind of illustrates that exponential growth that we had. So with people stuck at home, it made them address a lot of their sexual well-being, their sex lives, and they weren't out on dates, they weren't going out partying, they weren't leading a normal positive sex life, and therefore what do? You still want sexual satisfaction. The biggest growth area during COVID has been single females under 35. Our dominant demographics are 25, 45 heterosexual couples in a de facto relationship. We saw massive growth in the single female market because they still wanted a good, positive sex life. And therefore, products like Womanizer, Greedy Girl, 50 Shades of Grey all had massive growth. What was interesting, though, was we had the same stock supply issues then when China shut down. And with the effect of the international breakdown of distribution. But what people were buying was basically buying anything, really.
Right.
We were 25% out of stock in the tail end of 2019. Normally, we'd run between 3 and 4% out of stock. To get 25% out of stock and then have record sales was a unique situation. I don't think we'll ever see that again in our generation.
They're coming to the site. They're finding that your 25% of your stock is out of stock, but they're still buying something. Do you think that says more about you guys as a bigger brand, as the Love Honey brand, than it does about the product brands themselves, that they're willing to trust? Because, you know, you and I, if you go to Coles or Woolworths and they don't have the particular brand that you're looking for, you often sometimes just don't buy that particular category. You go, well, I'll buy it next time I'm here. But there's people here willingly switching products or brands because they sounds like that they have a trust of you as a big brand entity.
I think there's a bit of both. I think having Love Honey as a dominant adult brand, I mean, we were the number one online adult retailer and we were the number one adult brand full stop through unprompted and prompted brand awareness.
Yeah.
When it came to that accelerated growth, people had confidence in our brand in buying products. So where they might not necessarily have their number one desired product, we still, don't get wrong, we still had most of the key items in stock. But where the trust in the brand was through that customer experience, where we had 24/7 customer service, which no one else does in Australia, where we have free returns, where we have 100-day promise guarantee, so you can actually change your mind after usage and send it back for a full credit. So that kind of endorsement, you know, Trustpilot, we rate 4.7 out of 5, which is in their terms excellent. Having that customer-focused approach help people have confidence. And the number of new customers coming to the site in the last probably 24, 28 months, our key in the last specifically 12 months has been the retention. How do we convert all those new customers that have experienced Love Honey for the first time during COVID? How do we continue to mature that, keep the confidence in the brand and grow it out. So I think we took our opportunity, we took the potential, But equally, I think there's a market that really wanted to embrace sexual wellness during that time when we did a fair bit of work on mental health with a couple of charities, and the connection between mental health and sexual health is, they walk hand in hand, really.
Yeah. Talk to me then about that, how you retain those customers, because lots of new customers for the first 12, 24 months. What is it that you guys do that makes them come back again? I mean, is it service levels? Is it price? Is it quality of goods? Is it a combination of all of those things? What's making them come back and purchase again from you?
It is a multifaceted approach. I think having the brand, Love Honey, that we aren't, as we say, and my marketing manager, Tash, will kill me for saying this, we're not all tits and ass.
Yeah.
It's very bad English, but we're very conservative in a very unconservative industry.
Marketplace, yeah.
You're competing. It's adult stores in the high street where there was an issue with being able to actually go into those stores in one aspect. Mm. But by being very mainstream, and this is where a lot of our growth is coming from at the moment, by being very mainstream, but very, very conservative, not being salacious, that gave confidence to the consumer. But like there are four pillars in terms of 24/7 customer service, the returns, and also us gearing. And I think one fundamental for your listeners is why Love Honey's big success is we tailor everything we do to the customer. So if you place an order in summer in Sydney at 5:30, we'll get it to you next day, given Australia Post are working correctly. We are there, we call it the horny hours between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. That's when people want to inquire. Now, most customer service in Australia is closed at that time, but because we dovetail with our UK and American offices, most of our UK office will deal with Australian consumers at night. So we are able to address most needy, all the time address customers' inquiry within either live or within that first hour. And that is really exemplary, because you're not comparing yourself to other retail adult stores. You're comparing yourself to other retailers like Amazon, like Adore Beauty, like Booktopia, etc.
And I suppose when you've got that level of customer service that's crossing time zones, I suspect there's a fairly robust system in the back end there that's running all this. I mean, talk to me about, is that all custom build, or do you use software off the shelf? How was that sort of all put together?
In the early days, it was co-founders Rich and Neil, who were just friends. I think you met them before. They're just a couple of mates in the industry, and they wrote everything themselves in old Java, old .NET. And we are now experienced that change where we've moved to Salesforce Commerce Cloud, and now we're re-engineering our back-end systems. Now, after 17 years, that's tall order, and we implemented that during COVID. So not only do we have triple-digit growth, but we're putting in a completely brand new front end around our 9 international websites. So if I had hair to have lost, I would have lost it then. but fair shout to our techies that they did deliver, and they delivered on time. And hopefully this is now improving that customer experience. Like, we used to make our back end system, our CMS, we called it Chump just because we could.
Right.
It was our own system. Yeah. Now we're integrating with the merger with WowTech into a global, both back end and front end platform with Salesforce. And that's a big shiny new toy that we have moving forward.
The challenges you and I have spoken about in the past is you can't necessarily market to the industry or to the consumer in the same way that everybody else can. You can't go out and put out some Facebook ads. There are ways that a normal e-commerce business could operate and start tomorrow that isn't necessarily open to you guys. If you had to sort of hang your hat and said, you know, the one piece of marketing that we've done has been the best for us, what do you think that would be?
Well, yeah, as you said, Simon, Mr. Zuckerberg doesn't particularly like Love Honey. I mean, our proportion of spend on Facebook and Instagram is nothing, literally. It's insignificant in the big picture. The element to hang your hat on is really probably the coordinated above the line activity, where we've done TV and we've done some traditional media like radio, TV. but we backed it up with a service. So almost 300,000 customer reviews. That does your selling for you. So you'll get the attraction through on Foxtel or 9, 10, etc. You'll do Nova, you'll do the variety of above the line, but you do splice that in with just bloody good customer service. And when you have that volume of customer reviews, and one of the key things going back in the day, why Rich and Neil were so successful in the UK, when we met with the launch of 50 Shades of Grey in Australia, what it did do, and that what that brand did, was gave an opportunity for people to talk about their sex life, to talk about sexual well-being. The book, you know, people either love it or they don't. But with the book, that really did bring sex and sex products to the forefront. And by having a website that wasn't, what that was very female friendly, that was very couples friendly, it really did give a massive platform to grow off, really. So yeah, we've created our own luck, but equally there's been market conditions that presented us potential, and we reached that, really.
I've often said, we did a video the other week about Canva, you know, Canva being obviously a fantastic success story in the Australian digital marketplace, but a large portion of Canva's success is down to timing, not necessarily luck, but just potentially just being in the right place at the right time, you know, and piggybacking on the back of Instagram and Facebook. When people wanted to start doing their own creative, all of a sudden there was Canva with a simple tool that they could use. And you potentially did the Canva story 2 years later or 2 years earlier, and it wouldn't have worked out the way that it worked out. But timing was everything. Do you think this also helped you in terms of, do you think there's been a shift in attitudes for what you guys do from back from 2013, which doesn't seem that long ago to me? I'm like, that kind of seems like last week. But 2013 to where we are in 2022, do you think that media and the industry, just the consumers, are generally more aware and accepting of their sexual health than they were back then?
Yes and no. Yes and yes is that our timing was very pertinent. It was bang on in creating a platform that was accessible and that wasn't, you weren't embarrassed to use, unlike a lot of our competitors. And still today, there it is a bit confronting. We use sexologists and people with authority to actually communicate our core. But I think where the timing, I think, was and how the attitudes have changed. When I approached Rich and Neil, when we did 50 Shades of Grey together in Australia, I realized then that the model was direct to consumer. So that making the product and being able to communicate that to the consumer was the model to go with. And I think from having run Sexpo in the past, realizing that the market has changed, it's not just a once a year, twice a year, go to the shows or go to your adult store, that this is a prime industry for adoption on mainstream online. So therefore, if you can create a good system where people have confidence in it, then it will grow. To combine another yes is with the consumer confidence, but also consumer awareness, that things like, as we call it, the GOAT, but pulsating air technology products, where that is a game changer, that the womanizer product where you can orgasm in 30 seconds to a minute, and absolute revolutionary product. Same with the WeVibe, the C-shaped vibrator, that's the first couples vibrator. That certainly helped. What doesn't industry or where the consumers have evolved and really embrace sexual health now, sexual wellness, and that being part of their overall health. We did a big research project published just before COVID where 75% identified having a good sex life is good for your overall health. But really importantly, 25% said having a good sex life is good for your mental health. And that was over 3,000 respondents. So there you see the consumers embracing this. What hasn't been embraced is the industry or government and media channels. So
yeah,
whilst everyone's a lot more accepting, having a vibrator, having a masturbator, having good lingerie, that's now part and parcel of your life. Media channels have not evolved with that. So as we are getting more established, you're having a restriction on where you can advertise. So we've had to amend our TV adverts. We've had to amend radio adverts. Obviously, we can't advertise on Facebook or Instagram. So we're significantly handcuffed. Government are completely anti us. We do a lot of work with Dylan Alcott Foundation. And we are a big advertiser for employing people with disabilities. The government help agencies turned around to me recently and said, you can't employ people because you're in inverted commas in the sex industry. And it's like, we put a box which happens to have a vibrator or a dildo or lubricant in another box and we ship it around the country. We do it very, very well. We're a distribution company. Mm. But who are the government to tell us we can't employ someone because what we deliver delivers sexual satisfaction? We're not in the sex industry. I mean, they class that as sex on premise. I can assure you there is no sex on premise. We do not have time. nor would we do. But it just shows you how government are still in the dark ages when it comes to sexual health and sexual well-being, really.
It's funny because you see, even like, you know, you look at last week at the Oscars, the whole Will Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith stuff, they have what you would term as a non-conventional relationship. They've never been afraid of sharing that, but still that becomes the butt of a lot of jokes and a lot of comments to people. But two guys in a homosexual relationship, that seems to be fine, but there's still this kind of stigma about joking about that kind of thing. And that, I think, in turn is then where the media says, well, we can get clicks off this because those kind of jokes are what people want to see.
Some of the positive industry press or coverage is when we do like Sex Map. We do that every year now, and that gets huge coverage because it's presenting the data in a way that's a bit competitive. So you're trading off who's sexier, New South Wales or Queensland. Obviously Queensland. Who's into more bondage or rabbits, you know, obviously Victoria, etc. So, and even like international comparison between Australia and New Zealand. But someone asked me in an interview recently from a newspaper, said, how do you cope with keep getting pushed back? And I say, and you keep getting, like with the disability element, you keep getting no. And you say, what we do a lot more of it. We talk a lot more. We go to more talks. We advertise more. We promote those good causes even more. Example of our, we have a very strong employee program. So they have free gym membership, even free protein shakes every day at work, free mental health. So we have unlimited counseling. We have a brilliant gym in the city and all of our staff can go for free and it's brilliant. And we did a advertising with them for Valentine's and they got pulled at the last minute and they went, no, we might offend a couple of our audience. I'm saying, so you've got 18 to 40 year olds, mostly single, and you don't think Love Honey is going to be attractive to them, but it is that element of trying, you don't want to offend the one or two in comparison to accepting from the 98-99. And that's not, people aren't going to write into their TV channels going, what a great advert Love Honey did. It really empowered me and I bought loads of products. You might get the odd one or two who complain that we have a same-sex couple kissing on our TV commercial. Quite frankly, I don't want them as customers because if they're complaining about that, then they're not the Love Honey customer.
Totally.
So we're still getting pushback, but we just got to increase the volume. Yeah.
Those two words, I'm offended, has been the scourge of, I mean, not just your industry, but you know, plenty of industries in the past, you know, 5-10 years. That's all of a sudden everything has to stop and everybody has to worry about the 1% of people that might not like something. So I can imagine that is a huge challenge for you. Do you kind of see that happening with other, I mean, the one that's sort of jumping to mind that's obviously not your, you know, would be in the technically competitor space for you would be Honey Birdette, who are constantly being, you know, hammered for the window displays and all those kind of thing. Is that the same sort of people complaining? Do you think that same sort of challenge?
Having helped Eloise start her first range of toys in the West End, Honey Birdette 20 years ago, I feel a tiny bit responsible for Honey Birdette. They're great operators, and obviously they sale to Haynes Group and now to Playboy. They've done extraordinarily well, and their future is definitely overseas and their luxury lingerie. they tend to approach it from a different angle, where we don't want to create sensationalism. We don't want to cause conflict. They do tend to push the envelope. They're the other end of the spectrum. So they don't mind a bit of front page getting banned. We don't want that. We are the mum and dad in suburbia that want to embrace their adult life. But how we counter or how we embrace that is also by getting products into mainstream. So Adore Beauty has just launched with us. We're with Flora and Fauna, with Brisbane Company, the Sunwear Company. And we're about to launch a couple of big deals with some of the oldest retailers in the country. So by us being in these really well-known omni-channel or online retailers, that helps to push the messaging again, doing more positive messaging than negative messaging.
Last couple of questions. Where do you see the growth? Because again, you know, from the warehouse in 2013 to this massive, massive building that you're in right now, surely anyone who's buying a sex toy in Australia this year is buying it from you. Is your job just to make us all buy more? There can't be any competitors left. You know, where's that growth come from you guys, you know, over the next, say, 5-10 years?
I think there's always competition, and I think competition is good. Yeah. You want to really be lifting the whole industry. And that's where we do a lot of work, which we don't necessarily promote or advertise. Like with Frontliners, we just did a couple of big runs down to Lismore and Mullumbimby. Not because we want to be a big PR campaign, because we're part of the community. And by us being part of the e-commerce community, why we do a lot of talks, and we're at Retail Global.
Yeah.
You know, we picked up National Retail Association, Power Retail Awards, Orias. We're beating like the Iconics of the world and the Kogans of the world. By everyone lifting the industry, us with our competitors, it helps then the adoption rate. So we'd rather the industry is adopted by everyone, or the majority of people that want to adopt, that want to embrace it, than us just being the kind of the lone sharks. Don't get wrong, I'm a highly competitive, sport-loving Englishman over here. I came out here for, as you did in your podcast, I came out here for the Lions Tour 2001. I loved it when we stuffed the Aussies at the rugby in 2003, when we did the first Ashes campaign over here. However, I am still an Aussie now, apart from sport. And us lifting, we've done more. Love Honey's done more for the adult industry than I think most other brands, but we are very mindful that we have to do this as a collective. Therefore, putting stuff into big omni-channel, big pharmacy, big retailers is the way ahead. I think our opportunities now is the merger. Wowtech are the biggest business-to-business performance toy manufacturer in the world. That gives us our own manufacturing now. It gives us our own distribution out of China. So utilizing that strategic verticals, huge opportunity. Marketplaces, that's another. Whilst it's hard and Amazon are it and eBay is it, getting that to the commercial success that is acceptable is a huge challenge, but one which we are taking on board full steam ahead. And I think also just developing our own products. I mean, 70% of our product is either Love Honey licensed or own manufacturing. That's a future. You control your price point, you control your destiny, the shopping experience, and just doing a lot more. We have a global plan, installing it on a local level, so we could do another 48 hours every day and still not do all the work or the potential that we do have. I think we'll probably crack maybe 100 staff in next year and improve like things like Twilight delivery, where we have to compare ourselves to is Amazon. So if they're delivering between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. at night, we should be. If we're offering 100-day return guarantee, we're doing that now. You know, we need to be on the same level as the best of the best in e-commerce, not just the adult industry.
Mm. Two last questions. The website for anyone, if anyone listening to this hasn't been there, obviously go there, but I would assume most people have been there. You mentioned disability earlier on. It's obvious that the website is geared toward body positivity as well. Have you seen the sales grow because you guys are more embracing of that sort of everyday person, you know, the everyday body, the everyday shape, rather than blonde Gold Coast bimbos with big boobs? Do you think that sells more, that you are focusing on those real people?
100%. Where we had a couple of years ago, where the body positivity messaging, we had actually done that for several years before that in all lingerie, had an image of a base size and plus size as standard. It wasn't revolutionary to us. It was a right. It's we should be doing it, not should we do it. And therefore, I absolutely genuinely believe, and our statistics show that by having that inclusive messaging of, it doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is, what you like, what you're into, what you look like, what shape you are, doesn't matter. As long as you buy from Love Honey, that I'm doing my job. But it's making that aware that we are totally inclusive. It represents in our staffing, and it represents in how we do our marketing and our messaging as well. And to be honest, that's what the consumers want. There are some competitors you mentioned before that do go for that niche, that do go for the size 6, double D, blonde hair, and good on them. That's their market. Our market is 25, 45 heterosexual de facto couples in suburbia. Yeah. And if you can make a website that is attractive to them through customer reviews, through our sexologists, our ambassadors, I know it sounds a bit crazy and you might find this really weird, but they don't want to hear from a good-looking, bald, 40-something-year-old Englishman. I know it sounds crazy.
Crazy at all.
But if you present someone as articulate and knowledgeable like Chantal Otten or Bryony Cole, who's a leading sex tech expert in the world, or Cam Fraser, our male sex coach, they're the kind of people that they want to listen to. If you put that in a website, you put that through your social media channels and through your coordinated above the line, that's what people naturally align to. And again, being inclusive, we're working with a company called Bumpum to develop the first range of adult toy designed for disability users, created by disability users. So we're probably a year into working with them, and hopefully we'll get them to position to bring products to market. And that will be a world's first. But it's, again, it's not a question of should we spend our time and money on doing it. It's why haven't we done before? This is how you lift the industry and push it forward. And that's why I think we're number one.
Last question. You mentioned people like the National Retail Association. There's the big retail show that's on the Gold Coast in a couple of weeks' time. It's named Retail First. I forgot
Global.
What it was.
Retail Global.
Global, that's it. I've seen you certainly in the last couple of years doing more and more of these things, putting yourself out there in the front as the face and the voice of this, you know, maybe not the best looking face that they could have found, but you know, you take what you can get at the time. But obviously, and that's, you've kind of been more and more immersed in that e-commerce part of industry. Who have you seen out there that you look at and just go, fuck, they're good at what they do? Who do you sit there and think is killing it better than you are?
I made a conscious decision, you're completely correct, a couple of years ago to push the business on LinkedIn and through events a lot more to get that acceptance. I thought if we can get accepted by big business, then our adoption in the mainstream will be a lot greater. Being on board like Australia Post and Retail Global, that does definitely helps. But you are then open to a huge amount of people that you can learn from, and we benchmark our services to other people. So a couple to name, Ed and Dan from Trademark, they do the workwear with their charity called TX. This is a conversation starter. They've become dear friends of ours. I raised did a marathon for them last year, raised $25,000 just because we identify with their business of what they do. From mental health, they put their money and what they do in linking e-commerce, workwear, and mental health charity is brilliant. Absolutely. And I have a huge amount of time for them. I think Adore Beauty, Tennille, Kate Morris, Brilliant company in beauty and health. Same with the guy, Anthony and Guy, from Hair and Beauty. They've done very well.
Yeah, they've been on the show before as well. Those guys.
They're cracking. But I think there's some other businesses like Booktopia. Wayne, I went to see. I thought we had a great distribution model. I thought we were it. A lot of people come to see how we do things B2C. And then I walked into his warehouse and I realized, holy shit, I've got so much to learn. I had over a million SKUs listed there. And it's like, right, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I think from a social media linking in omnichannel, Simon Beard from Culture Kings, I think they've done a brilliant job. Same with Kim Zorn from Princess Polly or the AK brand group of companies. Got a lot of time for them. They know their market. They know their customers. And very similar to a very, very dear friend, Julie Mathers and Tom Abrams from Flora and Fauna. They've obviously just left after selling to the WX, I think their investment company. Flora and Fauna, I could preach about them to the cows come in. They're just they're a great company. They created a business for a bespoke reason and they made a great success of it. And they're all the kind of companies which we aspire to work with, but also compare ourselves to. But none of this would be possible without having a brilliant team. And that's where I've had the opportunity to promote Love Honey from a more holistic level by having just 67 legends in our business. They're absolutely what Love Honey is about, is a Love Honey family, as we describe it. We've got the dogs in the office. We've got our very cool culture, but hard working culture. And that's what facilitates our growth is having a brilliant team.
Mate, it's been fantastic having you on the show. I still tell people the story of me going to see that warehouse about a year ago and just being blown away by the sheer size and capacity of what you guys are doing. And from an e-commerce business, I don't think there's many people doing it better than you guys out there. I know you probably think there is, but I mean, it's not just an Australian success story, but you know, what you've done in Australia is huge, but you know, it's a global success story. So really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you for your time. I think there's a lot of things that people can learn from you guys and how they run their business. So mate, really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. And if anyone wants to reach out, check me out on LinkedIn. Come down for a warehouse tour, go home with some goodies, and the fun happens when you leave. Love, honey.
Thank you, mate.
That's pretty much it from the CMO Marketing Podcast for this week. We hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to seeing you tune in next week.